Journey Church is a community and movement, a fellowship of discovery. We desire to love well and serve often, as together we explore the adventurous love story of Jesus.
Well, it's great to be with you today and then to be back with you just a few days from now. How many of you are traveling? Raise your hand. Traveling this Christmas season, be on the road. How many of you will be home? You're here. All right, quite a few of you. Well, we hope you'll be joining us for Christmas Eve, and if that's the case, we'll get to see you in just a few days and conclude our conversation on Advent, considering the arrival of the King. And what we did this year when we kind of launched on this series is we thought, you know, there's so much drama to the story, the birth of Jesus, the whole manger stable thing. You got a shepherd showing up and angels in the heavens and wise men from afar. What if we just took the opening piece of the narrative? Is there a bunch crunched into those first couple verses in Luke in this great Christmas story? And if we just settled in there this season? And so that's what we've done, and we'll continue on in the conversation. Our first couple weeks, we talked about Rome and Caesar, and then we talked about Syria and Quirinius, who was a governor. And now we drop down. If you're doing the Google Earth thing and it was really, really wide, thinking about the Roman Empire, and you dropped it down into Syria, we're going to focus that visual image really tight now to a little village that was about this size. If all of us right here lived in a village together, that was the size of the town of Nazareth. Luke chapter 2, verse 1. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria, and everyone went to his own town to register. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and the line of David. You could read right there in that statement, to fulfill the prophecy of old. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. So today we're going to drop into a conversation about Joseph and preparation. But we learn something quickly about this God we serve and about the ways of his kingdom. When he decides to send his son to be born on the planet, where is the location? What place does he choose? Where do the announcements begin that the God of the universe is coming to dwell on earth? Begins in a little tiny village of about 400 to 600 people in the backwoods of Galilee. And so we learn something quickly about the king in this kingdom. The king does not come to the proud and the powerful, but to the poor and the powerless. He is most easily recognized with those in humble circumstances. I think this is why it's become so important for us to make sure that one of the central values of Journey is that we're serving those in need, those in physical need. See, this does not imply that having wealth is a bad thing. As a matter of fact, we often talk about Williamson County, and Williamson County is one of the wealthiest counties in our country. Should we feel bad about that or guilty about that? No, of course not. Building wealth isn't a sin. God's called us to good stewardship. So building wealth appropriately is actually quite beautiful and a wonderful representation of the gospel. It's just that Jesus is clear that when we build wealth, we have to be careful, because when you have money, when you have resources, it's really easy to be distracted by those things and look to your success, achievement, and wealth to solve your problems rather than God. Those who are without are very aware of their needs. So when we serve people who are in need, we're reminded with them when we're in their lives and in their world, wow. Like, this person isn't sure where they're going to get their next meal. This person isn't sure where they're going to get clean water. This person's not sure they're going to make it another day without the drug that they'd previously been using. This person's family is so broken, they're not sure they're going to have relationships that sustain them another month, another day. And the need is so obvious that I think probably the reason God made it thematic that we serve those who are poor, those who are powerless, those who are under-resourced, is because we are reminded with them of the great need for salvation and the great need for God. We are not our own sustenance. again, Jesus, God sends his son, Jesus, to be born in this backwoods place, and he visits a teenage girl and probably a college-age young man, and they're invited into a story that they can't possibly comprehend. And sometimes it's lost on us, and I just want to remind us this Christmas season that we've been invited into that same story. Maybe as a woman, God's not inviting you to give birth to his son, or as a young man, he's not calling you to be God's stepdad. But he's inviting you into a story that's the story of Jesus. This epic story that has to do with the salvation of the earth, of mankind. And you and I have been invited to play a role in this story. Joseph emerges in this story as a man of integrity. And we discover it through a few things. There's a little phrase in the passage we read in Luke, and then Matthew gives us a little bit more detail. First, the phrase in Luke. Did you see the action word involved? And so Joseph went. There's action involved in him doing what is responsible for his wife, for his family, doing what he has to do for his community. But there's more to the story. If we look in Matthew chapter 1, we discover that Mary has become pregnant. She lives in this tiny little town. Everybody kind of knows everything about everybody. And in saying that God has implanted his embryo, didn't go over real well with some people. And as you might imagine, people didn't believe her. And there were probably some people she just didn't even tell. But she's pregnant. It's not Joseph's. What is Joseph going to do? We discover something about Joseph, Matthew chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. And Joseph, her husband, being a righteous man, and not wanting to disgrace her, planned to send her away secretly. But when he had considered this, there's two things to catch about Joseph in there. Righteous man, we learn something about his compassion, not wanting to disgrace her. Again, he's got action involved. He has a plan. When he considered this, Joseph is clearly a thoughtful man. And more. Behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, in verse 24. And Joseph awoke from his sleep and did as the angel of the Lord commanded him. I'm going to assume that most of us know a lot of the details of the story, so I'm going to compress the story to just these interactions with God through an angel speaking in a vision or dream to Joseph. And so look at these quick little hits and add them up kind of in your mind so they can kind of give us a little picture of who Joseph is. Matthew 2, 13 to 14. Now when they had gone, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up." They had gone was the Magi. The baby was being threatened by King Herod. "Get up, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you." So Joseph got up, took the child and his mother while it was still night, and left for Egypt. Matthew 2, 19 through 21. But when Herod died, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph again while in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead." So Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and came into the land of Israel. Now here's what we don't read in this story. God spoke to Joseph, and Joseph panicked. God spoke to Joseph, and Joseph second-guessed God's instructions. And God spoke to Joseph, and Joseph hesitated to act in fear of exposing the baby. God spoke to Joseph, but Joseph didn't understand why God would lead him this way, so he refused to move, frustrated with God for not revealing all the details about what he was up to. We don't read that in the story. If it was us, we might read that in the story. That might have been our response, not Joseph's response. Why? What do we learn about Joseph? Here are the actions that follow Joseph's instructions from God. He went, he did, he got up, he obeyed. Joseph is a man who is prepared. He's been prepared for this moment. He chooses what is right, irrespective of what people think, and regardless of what is unknown and uncomfortable. He pushes through his fear and leans into the adventure in spite of huge questions. And there are huge questions. Joseph, you're going to be the stepdad for God. Okay. So, like, is he going to know everything when he's born? Like, how exactly does this work? I'm supposed to parent the creator of the universe. Will he magically create things when he's four? Am I supposed to train him in something? Or is he going to be like, no, I made that tree, Dad. Like, actually, that's not how you do it. Like, how exactly is this going to roll? Huge questions. Joseph is simply obedient to the directions of God. There is a simple obedience with this man. How many times does God speak to us? And nowadays, he tends to speak to us through his spirit, through the word. There are some real specific things from the word. Sometimes through the counsel of others. And do we respond with simple obedience? Or do we make it really complicated? God says to be generous. Well, I don't know if I could be generous. There are things God tells us to avoid and not step into, and we just do it anyway. What we see with Joseph is there's this really simple obedience. In this, the greatest story ever told, interestingly enough, Joseph is the only main character that is never quoted throughout the story. Joseph is never quoted. It appears that he dies sometime when Jesus is a young man. Before Jesus starts his ministry at 30 years old, Joseph is not around. And yet there are other brothers and sisters. So somewhere, either in Jesus' teenage years or probably in his 20s, Joseph dies. And we never get a quote. We can't quote anything from Joseph. We have no words. But I think there's something to be said about that. I think the authors left it that way for a reason. The absence of words magnifies his behavior. We have to look at Joseph's life and his response to the directions of God. Joseph is the perfect person of the picture of the person in the background. Even in the nativity set, the spotlight is not on Joseph. You say, well, it shouldn't be. I mean, the reason for the season is Jesus. Yes, but, you know, Mary tends to catch a little bit of that glow. And sometimes there's a little shepherd boy with a lamb, and he gets some attention in the nativity scene, or one of the wise men in his, you know, resplendent purple robes. But Joseph, he's just kind of, he's wearing brown. And there's hay, you know. Maybe you can relate to the background thing. Maybe that's part of your vocation. You have an administrative role somewhere. You have a technical job. Or maybe it's not related to your vocation. You actually really prefer the background. Maybe you're more introverted by nature, and you know what it's like to be in the background. Well, can I tell you something? The great presence of God backlights often what the world ignores or devalues. There might be times you even feel ignored or devalued. But can I tell you something? You have a significant role in the story. Even if you're not in the spotlight, even if you're not you don't have the big personality that comes in and dominates a room. Can I tell you something? You have a significant role in the story. Joseph did. And the truth of the matter is, even if it's your personality bent, it's not fun to be ignored. It hurts to be devalued. I've shared this before, but I lived most of my middle school years by myself, and I remember well the feeling of being ignored, undervalued. In particular, in sports, I was the last one picked, or not picked at all. And I just remember having a lot of time alone. One of the things we would do around Christmas time is we would go out to my grandmother's house, and sometimes, depending on the craziness of my parents' lives, I'd get to hang out at Grandma's by myself, and I'd go out and just hang out with Grandma. Well, during the day, I would just go out and play in the 4-foot snowbanks. I grew up in Buffalo, so snow was not a problem. But those of you who grew up north who spent time in the snow, you're going to know what I'm talking about. One of the things about the dead of winter, which December was the dead of winter for us, one of the things about being out in the snow is there's no sound, right? Those of you who grew up in the north, like, there are no animals, there's no sound, except possibly the wind. And if you're playing outside long enough, you got to get out of the wind. And so usually I'd make my way to a snowbank and I'd build a fort and dig down under. And I remember just sitting, I'd sit in the snow for, I don't know, it seemed like hours, but just I'd just sit out there, silence. And there were times I felt the weight of the loneliness of being alone in that silence. But there was something, even as a child and as a young man, I connected with God that way. I remember feeling the weight of loneliness, but also sensing that there was more. Maybe you know what it's like to feel alone or ignored. I mean, they say that loneliness is the greatest pain of humanity. Why? Well, because the complete contrast to that is the greatest joy of humanity is to be connected, to have connection, to be intimate. You remember in Jesus' teachings when he would say, I and the Father are one? He's basically saying God and I are intimately connected. And he actually says, and you and I will be one. There is this connection. There's an intimacy that we can have. You know, when you get off the phone with maybe some of you started calling family or whatever, or maybe you'll do this on Christmas Day, and there's somebody that you really enjoy, you really care for, and you hang up the phone, there's just a big smile on your face. Why? You had an intimate moment. There was a point of connection. You shared a memory, or you shared this values, or you're connected in relationship. For whatever reason, God's designed humanity for, and I think there are significant reasons, but for that kind of connection. I think that's why sometimes when we're alone, we feel the weight, we feel the pain. There's something disparate. There's so much space between the two, feeling connected and feeling alone. I've often thought, if I could go back to that 12, 13, 14-year-old boy, in particular at schools where I think I felt the weight of being ignored, if I could sit down with that young Jamie, I'd sit down and I'd say, Jamie, look, regardless of how it feels with your peers today, you know, in sixth hour, right after lunch, and you feel very alone and neglected or ignored, look, you're not ignored by the great designer. I know it feels like this in the moment, but God isn't ignoring you. He's actually preparing you. I wonder if that might be true for some of you today. Maybe you're in the space today where you feel ignored by God. And what if he's not ignoring you, but he's actually preparing you? You don't wake up righteous. You don't get up one day and go, I'm really righteous. That's not how it works. And so it's not how it worked with Joseph. When the Bible says that Joseph was a man who was righteous, it implies that something happened ahead of time. That Joseph went through struggle and pain. You suffer and you surrender and you take your ego to Mount Doom and you throw it into the fire. There's a journey that we all must go on. Joseph had been prepared by God to serve in this role. And Joseph was ready when God came calling. I wonder if the God of the universe isn't just waiting. Like there's something for you. Maybe you even know it deep down. There's this sense of destiny. Like, I think God has actually called me. I'm meant to be a storyteller. I'm meant to be an artist. I'm meant to create and craft this way. I'm meant to be an entrepreneur or a businessman. I'm meant to be a dad or a mom. Like something even deep within you. There's this vision that you have, and it's in there, a sense of calling, sense of destiny. But it just hasn't been realized yet. I wonder if the great God of the universe is just waiting for you to be ready. There's blessing upon blessing upon blessing. The tension is God's preparation and your willingness to be prepared. That one phrase, a righteous man, summarizes Joseph's faithfulness to God. Joseph was ready. And in just a few short verses, a short time later, angelic warriors would be proclaiming glory in the heavens and earth. But what's interesting about Joseph, he was already in on it. The rest of the world was about to hear about Jesus' arrival, but Joseph already knew. Joseph was being doused in glory. What's a good definition for glory? Eugene Peterson gives us a great one. Glory is when something magnificent is going on. It's something beyond our senses. We know it. Have you ever seen a beautiful sunset? My wife's favorite thing is sunsets. She'll call me up. Can you see the sunset right? She loves the sunset. And why? There's something about it. Well, your eyes, one of your senses, is feasting on the beauty, right? But there's more to it. And when you look at a beautiful sunset, isn't there something within telling you there's more to this? And there's even in the midst of the satisfaction and the joy, there's already this sense that it's about to go away. And as you're enjoying the beauty and looking at it, you're like, it's so beautiful, but something within you craves for even more. All these things are speaking to the soul. They're speaking to the thing that is beyond us. Ultimately, they're speaking to God's glory. Something magnificent is going on. God is reclaiming the planet. God is restoring the world, even if it's one soul at a time. Even if you look out at world history and you go, I don't understand. I see this negative and this isn't good and this is bad. You may not understand it and you may not see it, but God has a restoration plan for the planet. And the crazy part about it is you could be a part of it if you wanted to. There is something magnificent going on right here, right now, in this moment, even in this room. God's glory is being revealed in the journey, church. The question before us, each and every moment, is whether or not we want to be in on it. It's a great mystery, yes, but there are hints and whispers that reveal that much more is going on. So when's the last time you recognized you were surrounded by glory? God's glory. Jesus would ask the question like this: do you have eyes to see and ears to hear? Would you recognize it if it were in front of you? And what do we do when we taste a bit of glory? What do we do when we have this sense that there is a vision for something more? When we hear the whispers of destiny, but we don't yet know its reality, what do? We prepare. That's our stewardship. That's our responsibility, to be prepared. Psalm 50, verse 23, he who brings an offering of praise. Some of you, in just a little bit, are going to bring offerings. It's, for some of it, it's going to be a financial offering. You're a partner here, and so you give here. You're generous with your finances. So in a little bit, you'll go to a box, and you will bring your offering of praise. For others of you, it won't be, or it'll along with that, it may be an offering of praise with your words. Or it might be with your, there are those who are offering praise now with their actions as they take care of your children and teach them the ways of Jesus. Psalm 50:23, he who brings an offering of praise and thanksgiving honors and glorifies me. And he who orders his way aright, who prepares the way that I show him, to him I will demonstrate the salvation of God. If you go, I don't feel like I've seen the whole God restoring the planet thing. Like, I'm not recognizing God saving anybody. Then it's quite possible that you have not been faithful in bringing an offering of praise, or you have not been consistent in your thanksgiving, or that you are not prepared in your heart to see. Hebrews 12:1. This gets really practical. There's phenomenal words here. Great visual imagery here by this author. Let us strip off and throw aside every encumbrance, unnecessary weight, and that sin that so readily, deftly, and cleverly clings to us and entangles us, and let us run, shedding all the stuff. Let us run with patient endurance and steady and active persistence the appointed course of the race that is set before us. What good things are we missing out on simply because we are unprepared? And why are we unprepared? Because we're stuck. We're entangled. Something is wrapped around our legs, and we can't move. Have you had this feeling? Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, maybe you might be here today and you might say, this is me in my marriage. This is me on the job. This is me in my career. The dreams and vision, destiny thing, this is so me. I feel totally stuck. It's quite the contrast of what we experience with Joseph. Went, did, took, moved, obeyed. Joseph stays in motion. In the absence of what you don't know, would you still be faithful? Even though the prize for you may be just beyond your reach, keep moving. You go, but I don't know exactly what God's will is. God's will is that you keep moving, keep stepping in faith, keep preparing your heart and yourself. There are some real specific things you can do in Scripture, even when you don't know what your specific role is. There's all kinds of spiritual disciplines and practices and other things that God calls us to. Prayer, study, don't forsake the assembling of ourselves together. Be generous with your life. All these things that we're called to that are universal, and yet they're things that we often ignore because we're on the quest for our specific thing, God's divine will that's unique for us, and we get stuck. And that's just the absence of good things. What about the sin that the author was talking about that so easily besets? There might be something in your life and you go, man, this is the place I get tripped up most often. For, you know what? For some people, it's related to technology. It's this little screen you carry around. And it consumes your attention. So you have difficulty with relationships because you're not fully present because technology has become something that directs your life rather than you directing its life. Technology is no longer an extension of you, but it's something that owns you. These little tiny computer screens, these little tiny phones, it's crazy how something like this could disrupt. Rather than being something that's an asset in your life, it could be a detracting thing for you. And so your spiritual discipline might be, when I come home, I put that thing down and I don't pick it up so that I'm fully present with my family. Like, it might be that. It might be something that falls under the umbrella of Christian liberty. It could be alcohol. That you go, hey, now I see this as Christian liberty. It's okay for me to drink. But yet you've had trouble with the drink. And the fact is you have lost your control and it has controlled you. And so what's the spiritual discipline for you? Maybe it's confessing to, hey, we got drunk and laughed about it. That means we are laughing about rebellion and sin. We spit in the face of God and then chuckled. Hey, let's call ourselves out. We may have to put this aside. And on it goes. Like, just what's the sin that so easily besets? Where are you doing the work to say, God, no, I don't want my feet entangled. I want to be prepared. Because I know your spirit is calling me to lean into an adventure. There's something way more. I sense it in the depths of my soul, but I'm stuck. Joseph wasn't stuck. There's a reason Joseph could respond that fast every time God spoke. He didn't panic. He didn't hesitate. He acted. He obeyed. Why? Because Joseph was seen as a righteous man. Perfect? No. But he was running the race. He'd removed the encumbrances. See, life is uncomfortable in small doses. God is preparing us for pain and satisfaction and revelation and glory. You go, I like the fact that God is preparing me for glory, but I don't like the fact that he's preparing me for pain. He is. Some of the most significant events of our lives often involve pain and suffering. I don't look forward to it, but it's our reality. Even in, think about Joseph's story. Thinking about the fear that he had to face, taking his pregnant wife who was about to deliver. Can you imagine the panic and the chaos of the moment of her screaming, saying, Joseph, the baby is coming. You are the one who's meant to be responsible, and there is no place for me to deliver. Imagine that emotion for a man who's trying to fix things. And by the way, be obedient to the God of the universe in which he's now supposed to be his stepdad. Imagine all those emotions in the moment. Imagine the pain and the fear and the struggle. But he was found as a righteous man, which means some of that pain and fear and struggle came earlier on in his life. When you train for a marathon or a half marathon, you can't go run it in one day, right? What would happen? Your body would experience trauma. You have to experience smaller doses of pain and suffering to be prepared for the larger one. Even though that event, race day, is filled with pain and suffering, and it is, there is something that supersedes, that transcends the pain and suffering. And what is it? It's glory. That I achieved something I never could have achieved in the moment. It took practice. It took discipline. I had to reach down into myself and access something within me I otherwise have never accessed before. There is a satisfaction and a pleasure. But most of those are usually tied to pain and suffering, not separate from them. Another way to prove it to you is try marriage. I talk to single people who are like, well, I don't know if I want to get married because I hear marriage is hard. It is hard. And it's glorious. It's both. When you get married, you're going to put aside some of your preferences. Promise. And guess what marriage is a setup for? Parenting. If you haven't set aside a lot of your preferences in marriages, in your marriage, you're going to have an opportunity in parenting. Honey, there's diarrhea all over the wall. And actually a very creative design in the middle of it. Did you want to clean that up? Oh, you have both the children and you're breastfeeding both of them. All right, well, in that case, I guess I'll clean up the diarrhea on the wall. With the suffering and pain and discomfort comes a child in glory and satisfaction and relationship and joy. These two things are tied together. We tend to live in this dualistic mindset that they're separate. They're not. They're together. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4 summarizes beautifully, and I think it's a significant thing for us to remember as we go into this season and as we look to the new year. Consider it a sheer gift. Gift. This is the word. Gift. Could be wrapped under the tree. Consider it a gift when tests and challenges come at you from all sides. When all the stressors hit. Oh, it's a gift. You know that under pressure, your faith life is forced out into the open. They say if you want to know a person's character, see who they are under stress. You go, I don't really want to show that, right? I'm not prepared. Then there's some more work to do. Some preparation. Some spiritual discipline. You know that under pressure, your faith life is forced into the open and shows its true colors. So don't try to get out of anything prematurely. You're in a marriage that's broken. You're hanging on for dear life in your parenting. Your small group thing. Your relationship with your mom or dad. Your roommate. If it's really, really difficult, you're supposed to be like, oh, what a great gift from God. It's amazing. Christmas time. Let it do its work so that you become mature and well-developed and not deficient in any way. And so that when God comes calling to use you in a way you can't possibly imagine, you're prepared. You're found a righteous woman or a righteous man. You know, later on, while Jesus is teaching his disciples, they ask him questions repeatedly. The whole 3 years they're together. Question after question after question. Do you want to know how he responds to most of those questions? With other questions. He uses their questions to take them into uncharted territory, to lead them on into a trust and relationship that they don't yet really know how to ask for. He basically says, you're obsessed with facts, but I want to help you acquire a taste for the truth. I'm developing you to be a kingdom bringer, to be someone who knows how to love, both give and receive it. And so as we wait for the return of the King, let us patiently prepare diligently and trust the heart of our great companion and Lord, Jesus Christ. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes with me? Some space for reflection, contemplation. before January even arrives, would you consider some of the spiritual practices maybe that have fallen by the wayside that could be in your life preparing you for what God has in mind? Would you consider the sin that so easily entangles and set up boundaries? Father, would you guide us, each of us, individually, how to reflect you, and as a church, collectively, how we're meant to walk forward in faith in your story. We know there are transitions ahead, and we don't run from them, but we lean into the adventure. We look forward with anticipation and expectation, believing that you have wonderful things in store. We know that there will be with that a suffering and a grieving, but also a pleasure, a satisfaction, and glory. Thank you, Father, for calling us to be a church, and for even using the term bride, that you see us with great beauty.